These are the Keshi Tapes. U-Man and Favaz explore the backstories and interviews heard on Keshi, the longest-running rock station in the country.
Hey, it's podcast time again. It's time for the Keshi Tapes. I'm John Hewlett with my partner,
Favaz. Hi, Johnny.
How you doing, buddy?
All right.
We want to go with a guy today who is no longer with us, but who left a fantastic legacy of lead singing rock and roll talent and skill and music behind. And that's Ronnie James Dio. What a voice.
Tremendous voice. Yeah. I think when you think of metal singers, he's got to be number one in your head.
Man, he's got to be. If he's not number one, I mean, he's right up near there. And you stop and you think about all the groups that he's recorded with, including Black Sabbath and Rainbow and Heaven and Hell. Mm-hmm. And he also does the lead vocals on a Keshi classic album that Kerry Livgren of Kansas put out.
The Mask of the Great Deceiver.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Isn't that a great song?
It is a great song. Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, he's been one of our favorites here for a long time. And Favaz got a chance to interview him.
Yeah, and I think this was in 2007 when Heaven and Hell were going to reunite and tour. And that also happened to be the tour where we just did Geezer Butler of Black Sabbath. That's where I did my Geezer interview on that tour. This was beforehand, and he's with the drummer, Vinny Appice, I call him. Some people say, pronounce his name Appice, so you'll hear him on here too. But to talk to Ronnie James Dio was a big deal. I mean, we just had the anniversary of his death just about a month or so ago. Yeah. And he died of stomach cancer. And everybody says, you know, he was a great guy. I saw him one time at Pops. And
really?
it was great. I remember my vantage point of where I was and seeing him, and it was just really, really cool. So to talk to him was neat.
And another one of those rock and roll guys whose voice was much bigger than he was in person.
Yeah.
He was a tiny guy.
Tiny dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just could belt it out, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Loved everything that he does, really.
So let's go to the interview.
Okay.
And it's Favaz, Ronnie James Dio, and Vinny Appice. Or Appice, well.
However you want to say it.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Favaz. We've got Ronnie James Dio and Vinny Appice from Heaven and Hell. Hey, guys, how are you today?
Good, good. How are you?
All right. I was really excited to talk to both of you. This project called Heaven and Hell, but really the Black Sabbath, the Dio years, the record that's coming out. I don't know where to begin. Ronnie, with you maybe. How did this whole configuration get back together?
It started with the Rhino guys asking us to write a couple songs, new songs, for this album that's being released, Black Sabbath, the Dio Years. Once we decided to do that, but we decided to do it because it made sense. Otherwise, you really would have gotten a lot of, you know, rehashed things.
Wouldn't you have thought Ronnie James Dio would have been an Englander?
But he's not. He's a Northeasterner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
But you figure everybody that he's played with, the big
has
Sabbath and Rainbow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has that,
I bet he does a good British accent, though.
Probably so.
Yeah, or he did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Things from albums we've already done and a couple live tracks that probably certainly wouldn't be better than what we've done. So we agreed to do it because we wanted to get value for money on this one. And we began by attempting to write two songs. That went so quickly we decided to write three. And they're the songs that we're going to be talking about here, An Ear in the Wall, Shadow of the Wind, and The Devil Cry, which is one I think you have in its entirety at the moment. So that's how it all came about, and that's how it started all this. After it went so well with the writing, we thought, might be a good idea to tour behind this particular product, and everyone was chomping at the bit to play some of the songs we, you know, have done and written and recorded over the last 25 years.
Dio is one of those guys where when I think of Keshi classic stuff, you know, the our former commercial director Mike Duran always wanted to make that one Keshi classic sweep where he goes, and the devil lashed out and did the blah blah blah, and have the background noises
and the evil serpents did go to the center of the earth and they emerged with the evil blood sucking
I think of Dio.
He was into that stuff.
Yeah, Shadow of the Wind. We recorded three songs, Shadow of the Wind and the Earth of the Sun.
He could present the mysterious in a very dramatic and powerful fashion.
And this was our opportunity, so we took it.
Ronnie, the Dio Years comes out on April 3rd. 16 songs, the three new ones you were talking about. But the old ones are like Neon Nights, Lady Evil, Heaven and Hell, Die Young. When you got back together with Tony and Geezer, was it as easy to write with them as it was like 27 years ago?
Well, Tony and I wrote the songs. No, okay. Neither wasn't involved at okay. that point. He hadn't committed to the project at that point.
Oh, so, okay.
You know, as I say, the initial idea of this was only to write the songs, not to tour. So once the songs were written, then came the idea of perhaps let's tour, and then Geezer was included in that. Now, in the old days, of course, Geezer wrote, but this I can only talk about it now because it was only, you know, this way because Tony and I wrote these. And the question again was, Guy,
was it easy to write with Tony as it was?
Yeah. Oh, it was just so simple. I mean, we have a great rapport. We know what kind of songs we want to write. We don't want them to be wimpy in any way, shape, or form. We think the same. He likes the way I move things around melodically and musically, which, you know, gives him more ideas and allows him to be a little bit more passionate about the things he's playing. So it was instant. It was just really instant. It always has been with us.
I'm trying to think off the top of my head, if Ronnie James Dio ever did anything that was mellow, soft.
I don't know. You know, I've never heard his first band. You remember his first band's name? Elf.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Elf. I've never heard a song from them. I don't know what they're like.
Yeah, I remember Casey playing Elf.
Do you really?
Yeah, but I don't have a Casey classic from Elf. And there's one song that I do kind of remember us playing. I'd have to look it up. Elf. Shoot.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you know his real name? Ronnie James Dio's real name?
Ronnie James Dio's real name? I don't.
Ronald James Patavona.
Yes.
That's his name. Just for little trivia.
So,
useless trivia.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Of course. Yeah, we'll have to check on that Elf thing, though.
You're sometimes able to write songs in 5 minutes, and they turn out to be great songs.
All right, we're talking to Ronnie James Dio and Vinny Appice from Heaven and Hell. And Vinny, you came on board, I think that what I was reading in the beginning, that Bill Ward was going to be a part of it, and then he decided not to. And can you tell us how you jumped in?
Well, I got my Uncle Vito in New York to contact Bill.
Bill, yeah.
This is not time. Now, Bill was involved initially, and I guess Bill didn't want to really do the whole tour, and it's going to be a long tour. It's going to be pretty much the whole year.
Right.
And so everybody decided, well, you know, the next step, let's get Vinny. Let's call Vinny, see what's going on, and that's the next logical step. So I received a call from Ronnie's manager, Wendy Dio, and she asked me if I wanted to be involved, and I said, sure, absolutely. So next day I was on a plane over to England to put drums on these three new tracks.
Wendy Dio, that's his wife and his manager.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew that or not.
And she, yeah, I did, and she still runs the estate right now.
Yes, she does.
And is involved in putting some of these things together. The Ronnie James Dio 3D tour, what do you call it?
The hologram.
Hologram thing apparently is going to happen, and the technology's gotten better just in the time they've been talking about it.
That's a weird, man.
Yeah, it's going to be weird. I'd like to see it, though. I would go see something like
did
that.
Did they show part of it when it originally started a couple years ago? I don't remember, but it's kind of weird to see him and not to see him, you know.
Yeah.
And Vinny, tell everybody that may not be familiar with you per se. They know your name and they know Carmine Appice, but tell everybody who else you have drummed with.
I played with Black Sabbath.
Yes.
Dio.
The obvious, yes.
Yeah, and I got a new project now. It's called Three Legged Dog. And then I played just mainly with Dio and Black Sabbath. I did a little thing with John Lennon when I was young and when I started a career. Played with Rick Derringer, a band called Axis. And
right on.
The main bulk of it was Black Sabbath and Dio.
John Lennon.
Big time drummer.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you look at Dio and who he's played with. This guy has drummed with everybody, too.
Yeah, John Lennon. My goodness.
Hmm.
You know, I'll never forget, Ronnie, the Black and Blue, going to see that movie, the Black and Blue Tour. I don't know if it was called that, but they showed Black Sabbath and Blue Oyster Cult on the same screen. Do you remember did you guys tour actually back in those days under that?
We did, and I remember every single step of it along the way, because it was just really kind of a nightmare.
Was it really? Why?
Well, it wasn't quite so bad between the two bands, but the two road crews absolutely hated each other.
Now why does that happen?
You know, it just happens to be one of those things that, you know, you get a group of people together who have pride in you know, it's kind of like the Yankees and the Red Sox kind of thing, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this is our team, and that's your team, and our team's better than your team. Well, of course, we knew we were better than their team anyway, so that wasn't a problem. But we were managed by the same person. which made it, you know, a little bit
conflict of
interest. Yeah, conflict of interest, really. And at the end of the day, the film that you see recorded was one done in Madison Square Garden.
Right.
And that was, we would do things like if we played in Chicago, if we were bigger in Chicago than they were, then they would open, and et cetera, et cetera. Well, you know, I don't see how we could have been not bigger every place, but, you know,
right.
we had to play this political game, which we did, and we finally got to Madison Square Garden. And we had a cross that had been in our possession for a long, long time. In fact, it was even during the Ozzy days that used to hang up behind our
right.
drums. And that got conveniently lost before our New York
show. Oh, wow.
And then as we got to Madison Square Garden, and before we didn't realize that the show was going to be on film until, I think, the day before they told us they were going to film it.
Oh.
And then we realized that we had nothing, no special effects whatsoever, and we had to open the show as well. And they had,
Godzilla.
They had, yeah, Godzilla.
Right, right, that's right.
Pyro. They had, they interspersed it with a film, with a video that they had made especially for it. And our show started this way. We came out after our intro, and I have to start singing right away when everything happens. And I put my mouth to the microphone. There was nothing there. And I took the mic and threw it up, high up in the air as I possibly could, because none of us were happy about our treatment anyway.
Sure.
And if you watch the film, you'll hear, before I sing, you'll hear this great big loud clunk where they decided to turn the mic on while it was it was doing its gravity pull down the drum.
I don't remember that. That's great.
Well, that set everything up for all that nightmare thing. But, the film did well. And as you suggested, it's been, released in theaters, but it was a real conflict. It really was.
Do you remember that film?
No.
So I remember going to the movie theater to see it. I mean, I was probably, I would say 16, 17, somewhere around there. And I don't remember what he just talked about there, but I just remember just watching Ronnie James Dio going, yeah, it's Dio, and Blue Oyster Cult, I liked back in the day, but I remember the Godzilla. They had one of those phony monsters come up on stage when they played Godzilla. And it was, it's funny now to relive this interview and hear him say that the two crews hated one another,
yeah.
and they had to play the political game.
Yeah, I can remember back in the day when we'd go to these shows, multiple band shows, and there was never peace around these groups. They were all young and trying to make their mark and very competitive against each other, and it was always kind of a messy situation. I remember there was this whole kumbaya thing that's happened in the last 20 years is not the image I remember happening between these two bands. They were always out trying to outdo each other on stage and mess each other up.
I believe it.
Yeah.
And you think about it, Ronnie James Dio with Black Sabbath, they were trying to establish this new thing.
Yeah.
Even though they only put out a couple of records at the time, but at that time it was Heaven and Hell and it was huge. Blue Oyster Cult in 1980, 81. Were they still up and comers?
Not 80, 81. They were at their near their peak. I think so.
I can't wait. So they're going to be at the KC Pig Roast coming up in August, and I cannot wait to talk to them about what we're listening to Ronnie James Dio talk about. See if they have the same view.
Yeah, and they're also a band from up in the Northeast. So
right, that's why they headlined Madison Square Garden.
Yeah,
they're from New York.
Right.
So, with this project, guys, were you forced to call it Heaven and Hell, or was there any thought to saying Black Sabbath featuring Ronnie James Dio? How about that?
Well, being that Tony owns the name anyway, God, it wasn't a problem. It wasn't going to be a political thing. But I think that Tony felt that if it could be that, then it better to allay that problem right off the get-go. Plus the fact that they had been touring now for a long time within the Ozfest with Ozzy.
Right.
And, of course, then we're elected into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and, of course, with Ozzy again. Uh-huh. And I think that to them that kind of put a period on that part of it.
Sure.
So this wanted to be a bit more of a fresh outlook, just as the songs are, just as we wanted to make the tour be that same way.
Right.
We were going to call the tour Heaven and Hell. The name got adopted a little bit for the band as well, but let's face it, at the end of the day, what do you think they're going to call it?
Exactly.
And that's who we are.
Ronnie, over the years, you have played with some incredible guitar players. Who, besides the obvious Tony Iommi, who you're with now, but who really stands out in your mind that you really enjoyed being on stage with?
Well, I mean, I played with two of the greatest guitar players ever, and that certainly one is Tony and one is Ritchie Blackmore.
Right.
We're talking apples and oranges here. They're completely different players. Tony's riff master. You know, Ritchie writes some good riffs too, but Tony is riff master.
Right.
Ritchie is an absolute musical genius. You know, Tony is as well, but they're both geniuses in different ways.
Sure.
Ritchie is more very, very much inside of the technical aspect of the music and certainly knows all about that. Tony plays from the heart and from the soul, which I like much, much, much more. Ritchie was more of a challenge to play with live because he knew what he wanted to do, and what he did was very unusual.
And Ritchie wanted to run the show, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've never heard anything really nice about Ritchie Blackmore.
Yeah.
The other guys in Deep Purple, Ian Gillan, and they always said, you know, if Ritchie doesn't want it, then it's not going
to
happen.
Yeah.
So it was hard sometimes for the singer to have to adapt to that. I was lucky I never had a problem, which is why we were able to coexist for such a long time. With Tony, it's a lot easier. They're both great to play with. But, you know, I enjoy playing with Viv Campbell, too.
That's what I was going to ask you, Bob. Yeah.
I enjoy playing with Craig Goldie, another really great guitar player. I've been lucky enough to be around some of them. And the nice thing is Brian May always comes up and plays with us, too, when he's in town.
Good.
So Brian will play, too, and he's another one I enjoy a lot. But, those are the people I play with, and you really can't compare them because they all are so different. If you're that good, you're different.
All right.
Right, I just got to do this. Just in hearing his voice talk, some of the way he talks, you don't necessarily hear his singing voice.
Mm-hmm.
He's able to just transform himself into some other being when he does it. But I've got to do this. Right. Long live rock and roll! Long live rock and roll!
All right,
I had to get that out.
Glad you did.
Oh, God, one more.
Uh-oh.
I'm the mask of the great deceiver.
I'm really glad we have Ronnie Still on tape that we can hear his own voice.
Right. Well, the Black Sabbath, the Dio Years, comes out on April 3rd. The band is called Heaven and Hell. You start this Sunday, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Vancouver. And the first set of dates came out for the U.S. St. Louis isn't on them yet, but like you said, you guys are out all year, right?
Yes. We're going to do the first run through starting in April. April and May, and then we have to go to Europe for mostly the festival season at that time. But then we'll be coming back here again to do another American tour after that. So we'll certainly hit St. Louis.
I would think so. Well, guys, it was a pleasure talking to you, and good luck with the record. And
Vinny, we'd love to talk to you more, but you're just not as interesting. Sorry.
The tour, and when all this came about, I think everybody, it was a very pleasant surprise to see this whole thing come together. So we can't wait to see it.
Well, it really is amazing to us. We are surprised at how strong the reaction has been. Mm-hmm. We did this because we certainly wanted to do it with the joy it would give us to play these songs again, and we knew it would do all right. But the reaction has been stunning, and I think it's just the right time for us to be doing this again. And without people like you, Guy, we're not going to get this message out. And thank you very much for having me.
No problem. Let's play the song that we added last week, "The Devil Cried." And
remember, we can't play music. Just get ready.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, you weren't paying attention over there.
No.
You're on your phone.
In the litany of those three songs that you wrote, Ron.
Looking up the Elf thing. I don't recognize.
I did too. Yeah, I did
too.
I don't recognize
any of the songs from Elf that Casey might have played. But I know there was an Elf album in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
Ronnie, was this the first one or the second one or the third one? Do you remember?
Devil Cry was the third one.
Third,
the
last one.
Was Shadow of the Wind, followed by Ear in the Wall, and this was the third one.
All right.
Shadow of the Wind. Shadow of the Wall.
Song. Vinny Appice and Ronnie James Dio. Thanks, guys. Here's Heaven
Thank
and Hell
guys.
Now. It's KSU 95.
All right. Hey, didn't he was he in a dispute with Gene Simmons over the invention of the devil horn sign?
I think he might have been, because I think Ronnie was the one that came up with it.
And did Gene just try to get the...
Gene has always put up this sign, which is the devil horns plus the thumb. But in sign language, that means I love you.
Yeah.
Okay? This, when you tuck your thumb in and you just have your index finger and your pinky, that's heavy metal. That's rock.
That's
or whatever.
The devil horns. Which used to mean bullshit.
Right. And
do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
And that was like a universal sign, at least across the United States of America, for bullshit. And now it's gone. And I guess because... Ronnie stole it for rock and made it a rock thing.
I don't really care. I like what he did with it.
Yeah, I don't either.
But Gene with the thumb, though, cracks me up. He still to this day does it. And I was like, oh, I love you too. Ronnie James Dio. 2010, he passed away. So yeah. It's the 9th anniversary, stomach cancer.
Yeah, and he went pretty fast. Once
he did go really fast,
was
and he was good friends with my buddy Terry Welty, who got us the Geezer Butler interview. You know, he was Geezer's bass tech, but you know, he was out on the road with Heaven and Hell and knew Ronnie well, and just said he was one of the best guys ever.
Yeah, and he was a smart business guy too. I mean, he took care of his stuff, and he just, you know, for a while there, was just kind of like setting the standard of heavy metal vocal performances, you know?
Yep. You never heard drugs or alcohol being involved with Ronnie James Dio. I'm sure he had his good times because considering who he's played with and stuff like that, I'm sure he led a good life. But I don't think that ever became an issue with him. And, you know, most of the time, if you can do that, you'll have a straight, clear head and you'll make smart decisions. So
it still amazes me the voice that he was able to just pull out, you know?
Yep.
Just, I don't know where it came from.
I know.
You know, when you hear him speak, you just don't, he doesn't seem capable of that.
And he called me Guy throughout the entire interview.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that. Ronnie James
Dio. How come you don't go by Guy Favazza on the radio?
Smash. Start calling me Favaz. The day after the Guns N' Roses riot, you were there. I know you don't remember. But he said, let us now check in with the mighty Favaz as he is known in parts.
Yeah.
And that's what started the whole thing.
Yeah. He always felt like you couldn't exist on the radio without a nickname.
he's kind of right.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go. Thanks for another great interview, Favaz. You got a ton of them, buddy. And we're going to keep bringing them at you.
Yep.
Keep bringing them out there because Casey's got 52 years of interviewing history. And Favaz has been on a lot of these, as you may or may not have noticed. I got a bunch of them also that are still in the can that we haven't used yet. And then if we wanted to go even further on Casey Tapes, we got interviews that our fellow broadcasters have done over the year that we still have in our archives.
Well, let's also not forget, like, our sports people that we've done.
Well, that's true,
too. You've got Jack Buck, and, you know, we both got Brett Hall. And we could do all these.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be fun.
All right. We got a long way to go. This was episode 34 of the Casey Tapes.
That's right.
I'm John Hewlett. You can follow me on Twitter at STLUMan on an Instagram, Johnny Hewlett.
Instagram and Twitter, Casey Guy. Facebook, Casey95, Favaz.
Adios, my friend.
What you got today?
You are the mask of the great deceiver.
Yes.
You are going to hell.
The Casey Tapes with you, man, and Favaz. For more on the history of Casey, go to Casey95.com or the Casey mobile app.